Welcome to the Speckled Bees, a celebration of childhood. My name is Lucy.
And I'm Spencer.
This is the podcast that we talk about all things related to child development and education and how to celebrate childhood.
Each week we discuss a topic that drives our passion, intrigues, and interests us. And in turn, we hope that it's a topic that interests you too. So, for example, I have a lot of passion about this topic. It might sound simple, but we're going to be talking about art in nature. So not art and nature, art in nature.
Love
and
it.
I really wanted to talk about this because as the weather is warming up outside and more children, their classes and their caregivers are inclined to spend a greater time in nature. One of the best ways we could engage children with the great outdoors is to introduce some ideas of merging art with nature. I mean, this is one of the greatest pairings throughout the course of humanity. There's nothing goes more naturally together than art and nature. So let's consider early art forms. It was all created using natural materials. It's all we had. And it was the greatest form of communication when humanity was developing. This is the ultimate pairing. So Lucy, I thought this topic was pertinent to us. First off, because we were the art and nature teacher. And it was like, this is how we got along. We were these two this very alike subjects. And I thought it was interesting too, because I feel like something we've talked about in many episodes, whether it was more casual or more directed, I'd say, oh man, wasn't child A amazing because of how great they were at art? And you would go, no, child A never really liked my classes. And then you'd flip it the next week. You'd say child B was the best in my nature classes. And I'd be like, he didn't really like art that much. So I'm glad you liked that. So, and it's just really interesting how children can be so interestingly separate about those two subjects, despite the fact that they are so incredibly similar.
Yeah. Like I would think that it's just pure overlap, but
you think so, right?
But apparently not.
I feel like the only difference is that a lot of art is traditionally indoors. And a lot of the children that had some issues with nature class were a little more sensory focused. And I mean, like, but this is kind of the point, is art shouldn't just be an indoor activity. It shouldn't be a studio activity. It should be a world activity. So I just wanted to think about ways that this whole topic today is going to be about introducing art to our children. Some ideas to help us think about introducing art and nature as a combined force to our children. And both a contemplative manner and in a hands-on activities manner. So introducing your child to the art of nature is as simple as helping them appreciate the most natural beauties around us. When I first think of natural beauty, I think of a sunset. So Lucy, what is a natural beauty you could think of?
Waterfalls.
Okay, let's go smaller. Chasing waterfall. Music's good. That's a good natural art form too.
Oh yeah.
Okay, think small now, like your backyard. I think a leaf on the ground is very pretty.
Is this small enough? We are getting really into bird watching.
Oh, I love that. Oh my gosh.
I just can't even say you that seriously. Nerds. But well, I told you we had our bird feeder and then we just got, there's a long story. I won't tell you this long. We just got a birdhouse too.
Congratulations. And
yeah, we're excited about it. And you know, just having all, which I'm not a big fan of birds actually. But
we talked about this in the pet episode.
Yeah, I don't really like birds very much, but I think that kept that was really good for my mental health during the winter to be able to look out my window and see this all this life every day. And so I think that, like, I don't know, I've just come to really love them. And the last few days, like, we've just had so many. And I think with it snowing again and having it so weird and not having very many food sources because
of the extreme weather,
we had snow in April, you know, we just had a lot around us again. And yeah, just like the bird and the patterning on birds. Well, feathers, talk about a natural, so beautiful. Art form. Yeah, so beautiful. Gosh. So many patterns and bright colors. And yeah.
I'm obsessed. I was going to save the story for later. It was right before you started at Compass, Lucy. I love myself for doing this art project. So I'm going to toot my own horn. I had our elementary age students and we were talking about naturally occurring patterns was our theme. So for example, we talked about the golden ratio. If anyone's ever seen the golden ratio, it is the, it looks like a swirling shell. Mm-hmm. And Da Vinci invented this because it's the perfect ratio. It's you keep connecting points. Oh my gosh, I'm going to describe this so badly. The point is you connect these perfect points and it creates this perfect spiral. And it's called the golden ratio. So we had the kids, each one of them, we talked about nature. The one of the greatest patterns in nature is animals' fur and camouflage and feathers and whatnot. Uh-huh. So each one of the kids, it was very intuitive. They had to pick an animal and then they had to design a space for the animal. And it didn't have to be like, you know, a jungle and a monkey or a lion in the plains, you know, like it could be any design you wanted. And some kids went very basic, you know, they did like a green forest or they did a blue ocean, but some kids really understood the assignment. And they did like crazy stripes, right? So they had to sculpt an animal, build a habitat for it, pick a pattern or design for the habitat, then match the animal to camouflage in that habitat.
So cool.
It was really fun because it really made them think to themselves, why are animals patterned a certain way? Generally, it's to blend into their surroundings. And this ended up leading to a whole conversation on like humans and why we dress a certain way. We dress to fit into our surroundings. We are animals in of itself. So I like that. I like the part about the birds and I like what you just led into because it's everything. We can help our children appreciate nature by appreciating all the natural beauties around us. And there's so many. So, and I mentioned a few other things that instantly made me smile, like the shiny side of a slide. I love that. Mm-hmm. Or like, let's go deeper than sight, like the smell of grass or a chain fence clinking.
Oh my gosh, Spencer. Hmm. Have you ever read the book Giraffes Can't Dance?
Mm. Obsessed with it. With what is his name?
Gerald.
Gerald.
It's our current obsession right now. We got it from the library and I've read it before, but like so good. Leo has like, this has connected to his heart. Like it really spoke to him, this book, apparently. I'm not sure why, but he has us read it all of the time. And
it's such a good book.
Yeah, it's really, really great. But yeah, so like, you know, he can't dance and then the cricket talks to him and he's like, you know, see, you just, everything makes music. Like you got to find the music that speaks to you, this is said in rhyme and in a much better way. But, and then he's able to hear the moonlight and the leaves like rustle in the trees, and then he dances and he's the most amazing dancer. Ugh. And you know,
and that's exactly the point, the appreciation. I love it. How it inspired. Oh, I just realized why I love that book and why I know it. It's art studio, soundstage, or both. They listen to the audio tape version.
Oh my gosh, I bet that's very, very fun.
Very, very good. Lots of expressive music for each. Anyone who's never read the book, each animal has like a dance type. Is that what it was? Like,
yes. Uh-huh.
The salsa samba, like the salsa samba, the lions. That didn't make any sense. But that's a great example of a good, like, descriptive book about appreciating things. Cause you're so right. And that's the goal, right? Is making children introspective, whether they realize it or not. It's like you really look at things and kind of think of them on a deeper, more emotional level.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I like talking about Leo and how you interact with him is that's my dream child. I love your son. He is such a dream. I want a kid that wants to be enthused about the world with me. And I think that's why I like this topic so much, art and nature, because it's the most natural natural conversation with your kid is to observe something and get excited about it with them.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That was something that with my training for being a nature teacher, that was a part of, like, a literal part of our training is that we were supposed to go out and we were supposed, how do I word this so it sounds like a good story and not just stupid?
Curious now.
So I had a professor and he would take us on walks and he'd kind of do it where he would show us, he would just point out every single thing he saw. And he wasn't making real observations. Like, he wasn't sharing any opinions on it or anything. It would just be like, look at that bird in the tree. Do you see this? Do you see that? Like, just pointing out everything that he could see and noticing everything. And then we'd go through and one of us would take the lead and just notice everything. And I think that has been such a fun skill. Obviously that's been valuable as a nature teacher, but I love when I go on walks with family members I often go on walks when I go visit my parents and my brother and his girlfriend, and I'll just point things out and it will be fun because often it's something that it will be a hike that they always go on and it will be something that they never noticed before. And they do this walk every day. And then once you start it, it's like a domino effect and everyone just starts becoming way more observant and noticing everything around them. And you just notice all these little details and it's so much fun. That was a long story.
It's such a good story. Like a collection of memories. It's like, and I love that too, because you don't just have to, you know, I tell parents, teachers this all the time. I'm going to throw art back into this. Doesn't always need to have a physical production. It could be the experience, the journey that gets through your artistic process. And that's a process in of itself. And you just led me right into one of my favorite activities that can really easily be an incorporation for people fresh into this that maybe are feeling a little artistically or naturally stunted. I spy. Play it as a game as you walk along. Make, as you said, blatant identifications and work on identifying some beautiful or interesting things around you.
Right. Because it's not even like, that's not like an innate ability. I mean, I'm sure some people are more observant than others, but it's a skill. You just hone the skill. And then once you start, it's like a muscle.
Recently, I'm sure somebody listening will know what I'm talking about. And there's a phrase for it. There is a mental exercise that's highly recommended for people with anxiety. And it reminds me of like adult I spy. It's called I see, I touch, I feel.
Yeah.
And if you're ever having a panic attack or a really down moment, you're supposed to say out loud to yourself five things you can see right now. Like, what can you see right now? Four things you can touch, three things you can smell, two things you can taste. And then, I'm messing up the order. I think it's one thing you can taste, like four things you can hear, things like
that. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I don't know the details, but I love
there's a concept. Term for it. And it grounds you. And I think this is kind of the point with these nature art-based activities. It's supposed to make you slow down while taking in the outside world. And it's also supposed to make you enjoy art a little more in the moment. It really is a great combination. I've been trying to do that a little more often, is that little five things I can see, four things I can touch exercise. It really is a calming factor.
Cool. I've never actually done it before. I bet it would be.
It's important to bear in mind, like, simplify it, do things like I spy. The point here is that we are trying to exercise their children appreciation for the world around us, especially the natural world, to help them gain artistic inspiration. A great exercise for you, if you want to take the I spy up a notch is constantly work with your children to acknowledge and admire the little beauties around you while applying artistic attributes. This gets them ready for a combination. So for example, you could say, wow, look how pretty the rain is falling down the window. Let's get closer and see what colors we can see through the rain. It's almost like a whole new world out there. And so you're giving them new perspective on things they're already seeing.
I love that. The activities, is that okay? If, were you in the middle of a thought?
Yeah, you're good.
Okay. One of the activities that I like to do, just talking about these different things that are not just sight. One of the exercises I love to do at the beginning of a class outside is have them all close their eyes and have them listen for, well, it depends on the age group that if they're older, I'll have them choose 5 sounds that they can hear. Ooh. And if they're younger, like just like 1 or 2 sounds, maybe I'll point out like, keep your eyes closed, but raise your hand if you can hear a bird, and like have them zone in. And I've even been in a group where this was adults, but so I haven't done this yet with children, but I think it would be really cool, is probably older children, where you have them for the first like minute, it's like 3 minutes where you're sitting in silence. The first minute they're focusing on anything in the, like that's right around them. And then the second minute you're focusing on like farther away. So maybe in another room, can you hear what sounds can you hear in another room? And then the last minute it's, what's the farthest sound that you can hear right now? So maybe you hear a sound outside, you know, like the very farthest sound you could hear, which again, I think would be difficult with younger children, but super cool with older children and super cool as an adult to do a similar mindfulness exercise to bring you in the moment, you know?
I like that. Oh my gosh. What a great exercise, because it's really making them focus on appreciating things in big and small quantities and in close and far proximity. And I think that's a big mathematical factor that I was realizing as I was going through this episode layout, was a lot of art in and with nature is also a lot of comparison and a lot of speculation on size and, like, you know, in pattern and grouping. It's like, what do you see? Why does it look like that? How big is that? What can we see about it? I just thought that was really interesting how, and this may be a kind of obvious statement, but nature and art is very pattern focused, you know, like bark in a tree and lines in a leaf. I just thought that was quite fun.
Very mathy.
Yeah, when you think about it. So, but math is another, you know, big and beautiful factor about the world. So that's I was about to make another really blanket statement. Anyways, and so one way that you can graduate this activity up a step is when it comes to appreciating nature and finding art in nature, graduate your child into a literacy exercise, which is look up, read books, look online for examples of like jaw-dropping natural beauties. There are so many in this world. And if you have your children really revel, R-E-V-E-L, it sounds like I said revel in these beautiful and amazing creations we have in this world, that's another way to help them gain appreciation for how incredibly artistic and wonderful our world is. So I included a few examples of very strange or wondrous natural art forms in this world that you can look up on your own time, and we will attach the mud volcanoes of Azerbaijan.
Wait, say that again.
Azerbaijan?
No. Mud volcanoes.
Mud volcanoes.
It kind of sounded like mud volcanoes.
Mud volcanoes.
Volcanoes.
Oh, Azerbaijan. Dude, I'm bored. It's doing great. So there is a I love this description. Mud lovers trek to Gobistan. This is the capital of, this is right south of the capital of Azerbaijan. There are a number of small volcanoes that
regularly spew thick gray mud, which apparently has medicinal qualities.
Interesting.
So people will just strip and like bathe in this goo.
Wait, like I want to read that. So don't be surprised if you see people stripping down and lathering themselves in the goo. Who wrote that?
This place, I've never heard of this before. And this just, first off, the pictures are stunning. It's like amazingly eerie landscape of cracked like mud everywhere. So imagine showing your child that and being like, there's a place in this world where mud just is like everywhere. And people are bathing in it. And there's also ancient inscriptions, like there's like rock art. It sounds fascinating.
Wouldn't that be so hot?
That's what I was wondering, but I have to assume the way they keep describing people bathing in it, it's more like a what do you call
like
those?
A hot like a, spring?
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Definitely on my bucket list now. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, how cool is that?
So I'm looking at more of the images. It's fascinating. It's just like these beautiful bubbles. There's like bubbles of erupting mud. It's so pretty. It's so creepy, but it's also so pretty. So I highly recommend. I feel like this is something that, you know, any child would be fascinated by to look into this because it's just interesting, you know, it's mind blowing. Oh, well, it does look hot. There's an article from a year ago. One of the Azerbaijan mud volcanoes erupted in fire. Hell. Okay. Ooh.
Well, I hope nobody was in there.
I hope not too. So they do have the ability to blow up. That's nice. So maybe just look at it. Don't. Yeah. Are you seeing pictures of it?
Yeah.
Huh.
Those apparently the there's little a massive bubbles, Twitter thread. Like the mud bubbles are just.
Aren't they cool?
Yeah.
It's like right above Iran, right next to Turkey.
Okay.
And below Russia and Ukraine. Huh. Okay. So good to know. Mm-hmm. This is personally on one of my lists to go to. This is a lake that hits multiple countries in Africa, but quite specifically Kenya. There is a massive like cobalt blue lake in Kenya in the Great Rift Valley that is bright blue because of all the algae in it, of which flamingos love to eat this algae. So they all flock here. So the lake is like bright blue and bright pink. And then beyond that as well, you have all these amazing animals that visit the lake. So hippos, rhinos, giraffe, buffalo, etc. I mean, this would be a amazing natural wonder to show your kid. Like flocks of you know, bright pink flamingos and bright blue waters. What a fun thing to share
with
them.
I feel like that is part, like, maybe life, our planet Earth, or I feel some nature documentary thing that I watched not like within the last 2 years at least, probably on Netflix, maybe on Disney Plus. I don't know. I think that they talk about that specific one.
That is so cool. I
might be wrong, but
there's a reason why that is one of the best. Oh, so by the way, I'm wrong. I thought it was a lake that bordered other countries. This lake specifically sits in a highland of Kenya. There is Lake Victoria is the massive lake that borders multiple countries. That's what I was thinking of. So, but this one quite primarily sits on its own and thus is quite an interesting ecosystem. So fun fact. Yay. Good stuff. Yay. Okay. Another one to really look up, and I've been notably picking colors or interesting facets that children would be interested in. Ayers Rock or Uluru Rock in Australia, which I thought this was more well known, but I've met a few people that don't know this. Mm-hmm. It is a massive. You don't know this?
Mm-mm.
I thought you. I don't know. Like, to me, I guess, like, all those, like, movies as a kid that had Australia, this was always in the background of a cartoon with the kangaroo jumping in front. It's a massive sandstone mast that's 350 meters high. And it's just, it's a massive sacred and spiritual site for the Aboriginal people that lived in Australia. And it's actually, as far as I understand, no one's allowed to even get close to the rock anymore because it's been designated as such a sacred spot. but it's the stunning bright red massive rock that sits in the middle of the desert in Australia. I mean, like, you want to get your child inspired, just check out pictures of this rock at sunset. It is awe-inspiring. It's considered one of the most unusual and like extraterrestrial natural landscapes in the world, because truly it's just a massive red rock rising out of the desert with nothing else around it. Like, you know, like Utah has like rock formations and Arizona has these insane, but there's other rock formations. This guy is alone.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So he kind of looks like a bug. Do you see that? Like an eye at the end?
Yeah. Like, or like a naked mole rat.
Yeah. I like that better. I know you're going to talk to us in next week's episode about bugs and liking them, but giant bugs don't really sit well with me. So
I'm excited.
Patagonia, Argentina. This is the most southernmost tip of Argentina. It sits very close to the Arctic. And this national park, which there are quite a few in this area, it is constantly growing and contracting, which forms this amazing natural ice dam that just has these amazing like natural ruptures every 4 to 5 years, and ice will explode and these blue peaks will form, and it's stunning. So we just
went I totally read it as 4 to 5 hours, and I was like, that's crazy.
How cool would that be? Oh my gosh. I wonder how they predict when it happens though, because imagine showing up and hoping it's going to happen while you're there and then it never forces the water out. So
yeah.
Oh, it's just so interesting. So
have you ever been to Yellowstone?
No, I'm dying to go.
It should be on your list. I'm so mad. We lived like an hour away from it. And when we went to school, and we only went once, and that is one of my biggest regrets. But Amazing.
Let's conclude it on this list that is Yellowstone.
Okay.
Especially those rainbow geysers.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what it was, but like Old Faithful, it was one that we went to and we watched it go off, I think. And they have like a timer there of like when it's expected to go off, and people will just like camp around it and wait.
That's so cool.
The sulfur lakes, like the
they're amazing.
Yeah, every part of it, you're just like, the geyser was actually one of like the more like, oh, okay, that's fine.
Yeah. But like, this is like exactly my point. There are so many amazing things in this world that really make you go, holy moly, like we live here. This is like we're allowed to be here.
What?
Like, it's so amazing. One I didn't put on this list, but especially if we're talking about like North American wonders, the Petrified Canyon, the Petrified Forest of Arizona. This is on the way to the Grand Canyon from the New Mexico side. It is a massive, it's not massive compared to the Grand Canyon. It is a very large canyon that is layers and layers and layers of rock sediment that look like a rainbow, because there's so many different colors of rock. And then amazing formations throughout this national park. I don't know how they manage this, that look like rainbow trees because they're petrified pieces of wood. Cool. So it's we live in a really beautiful world. I mean, there's so many things to admire. I included some other examples. I won't go into too much. The Great Barrier Reef felt like an obvious one. Mm-hmm. That's one of the greatest natural sites in our world. And I mean, Finding Nemo and Finding Dory, that movies did such a good job expressing that beauty to our children, because how many children that have seen that movie now, like love, you know, the Great Barrier Reef, and they love the turtles and they love the fish because that movie was so inspirational. So it's these little things that can glean so much inspiration for our children. So, and then I'll include one of my favorites that I really want to go to. I feel like I've included too many blues themed natural wonders here, but Moraine Lake and Banff National Park. It's one of my goals to go here. It is the stunning lake that sits in the Canadian Rocky Mountains, and It's known for its incredibly deep crystalline waters with soaring mountains and like a sky that mirrors it. I did find out though that these bright blue crystalline waters it's so famous for, they're like as blue as the sky, as the Bahamian waters of the Caribbean. They're only that blue in June and July because it's a result of all of the runoff water from the mountains when the snow finally melts. But similarly, you can go in January and February. I don't know which one I want to do more. And the water freezes so thickly and so fast that all the bubbles from deep within get trapped in the ice. So there's just massive bubbles below you in the ice. And you can walk on the ice.
Oh,
that's a
cool
big bucket list thing. So yeah, natural wonders. Explore things with your children. Do you have things that you've just heard that you want to go look up? Or maybe if we missed an amazing natural wonder, there are so many, that you would like to talk about. It's what inspires you, what excites you. That's the opening for our episodes every time. Because whatever inspires you can probably inspire your children as well. Just to get children to start thinking in more of an artistic direction, let's talk about artists that have been inspired by nature and how they've handled it. I've taken a small list.
I love these episodes when we talk about artists.
I just love thinking, I get inspired by a lot of these artists because it's interesting to think how I, as an artist, could make some interesting art either based off of, so it's kind of an interesting collection here. It's artists that make art based off of nature or artists that make art using nature. First on this list is Catarina Apal, who paints still lifes and other works inspired by nature. So she uses bright colors and she, her whole goal is to create bright and positive artworks. And this would be a great topic with children because, and I'm going to include links to all of these artists in our podcast notes. She's great to just talk with color theory with children. She's an easy one to like and to love. Miranda Lloyd is an artist who does graphic design and traditional arts, focusing on mostly trees and animals. So she uses a lot of texture and line work to create mixed media pieces that focus on nature and the shape of nature around her. So, you know, we found a lot of natural lines and roots of trees and tree trunks. And that's one of her favorite focuses is creating these beautifully lined tree art pieces. Cool. So these people that have used art in nature as their inspiration. Lorenzo Duran is a good example of using nature for your art. He carves into leaves, dried leaves, to create these amazing leaf cuttings. I mean, my description verbally cannot do justice to how incredible these small, intricate pieces are of this man carefully cutting out designs from these incredibly thin leaves. So
speaking mindfulness, like, can you imagine how in the moment you'd have to be and calm you'd have to be to do this?
And then you leave.
Yeah. And then you do one wrong cut and like ruin the whole thing. And you just have to be like, all right, on to the next leaf. You
know, scooch yourself down our list a little to look at Walter Mason, who does something very similar. He manipulates and arranges nature, such as cutting out leaves, in very distinct and elaborate patterns, and none of which are meant to survive. So he captures them in photographic content. Whereas the last man, Mr. Lorenzo Duran, he does keep the pieces. I do like Walter Mason's format though, that he creates and destroys, because it's more interesting to me that it's so fleeting, much in the way that much of nature's beauty is.
Yeah.
Brian Nash Gill is another one to look into for his woodcut art. He creates relief prints using tree stumps that allows viewers to see, and I quote, the soul of a tree.
Oh, I love that. Oh, that's giving me all sorts of chills. Sorry.
Isn't that amazing? I mean, look at the age that you're seeing in this picture right then and there. So, oh my gosh. So cool. If you don't know what a relief print is, that is where you create, you capture the texture of an object by typically painting the top of an object and placing paper on it or rubbing a top of paper that's placed over a textured object to get the pattern below.
Which is something you do with children a lot. Like, that's a pretty common project to do, but how cool would that be to do it as a study and study all of his works and then do it. Like, yeah.
And if you want to simplify, if this is still confusing, it's stamping. It's essentially stamping or, and, yeah. And if you're, yeah, it's amazing. So, I'm going to skip this man. I'm not a huge fan. not impressed. Richard Long, scooching down the number 7, Lucy. Mm-hmm. He creates art. He creates sculptures and exhibits by just manipulating nature around him. So it's quite interesting is how he would go into these elaborate landscapes, like just stack rocks and take amazing photographs of them. And it's just an interesting concept is how can you just find an amazingly natural subject and work it towards your means. So he takes rocks, he takes natural objects, mud even, and he creates natural installations that can be viewed if you take the time to go out and see them, or if you would like to take a photograph of them and capture it forever. Oh my gosh, he is so famous. We had a book on this man at Compass, Andy Goldsworthy.
I think this is who you sent to me one time, and I'm completely obsessed.
He finds natural patterns in nature using some of our, nature's greatest color workings. So, for example, the picture that Lucy and I are viewing, he has arranged fall leaves in the most impressive gradient from the brightest yellows to the darkest browns and blacks. And it just creates this amazing illusion and interpretation of color. Because I bet these colors would not look so impressive had they not been layered in this ombre effect that he has put together. And this comes back to helping children appreciate the little parts of nature, because he's taken all these leaves and placed them in a way that they are just utterly mind-blowing and astounding. And it's like there's so many things in this world that we could appreciate individually, but we could also appreciate when it's in a new situation or a new element. And finally, Nils Udo. Whose artwork is mind-blowing. Lucy, you'll have to look into him a little more on your own time. Nils Udo is a German visual artist who manipulates nature to create unreal and almost uncomfortable situations in nature. So, for example, he will carve a pit around the base of a tree and perfectly carve out every root to be seen through this pit that he has carved out, this geometric pit. Or he'll create a massive bird's nest using logs that are taller than humans, and it will be so perfectly perfect in a way that should never exist in nature. And that's his whole goal, is to create these stunning exhibits of unnatural nature. And it's just so
weird,
strange. Like, yeah. There was one.
It's really cool. I just hope he didn't hurt the tree.
Yeah, from what I understand, he does pride himself in respecting nature too. So, like, he'll grow.
I mean, I bet
foliage. Like, that, like, purposely, like, take like a really interesting shape or whatnot. So it's just, it's up to you. How would you manipulate nature, and how would you appreciate, or how? There's so many ways to appreciate art and nature, and art and nature. It's just a matter to you of how you would like to experiment with the art around you. That we can start appreciating art and nature better is to create natural paints. It's one of the perfect marriages of art and nature.
Love
and
it.
And Lucy and I, you and I have definitely experimented with art and paint and nature and art and whatnot. And so I figured this would be a nice part to make a big subject, because it's one of the, if you're having a hard time saying to yourself, man, I don't think I can take my kid outside and make them put sticks together, or you can't take them outside and make them appreciate a sunset, well, then, you know, paint is a really good stepping stone into this combination of nature and art. So powdered herb and spice paints. This is one of the most common tools, because spices and herbs make for really good natural dyes. You'll need powdered herbs or spices in varying colors, clay or cornstarch. I'm going to get into why you need those two items, or one of those two items, and a liquid, which can be water, egg whites, or glycerin. So let's break down these ingredients. For the powdered herbs, here are some options that you can use. They help you get the color that you're seeking and the pigmentation that you would want for your paints. Turmeric to get orange. Mustard to get light yellow, spirulina to get dark green, beetroot to get red. Oh, so beetroot to get pink if you want to lessen it a little bit. I recently saw a recipe, Lucy, for beetroot pasta where it turns your pasta a brilliant neon pink. Bilberry cool. fruit, or to make a little lesson, so blueberries and blackberries to make purple, activated charcoal to make black, and arrowroot to make white. All of these herbs and spices and fruits mentioned, well, and see, that's why I'm careful about the fruit, can make your paint taste kind of gross, and that way you don't have to worry about your toddler eating too much of them. Plus, by using herbs, and speaking of Lucy, of like your feeling about, you know, not wanting children to associate a tool with eating, that's why I would lightly say the bilberry fruit is mentioned more so than blackberries or blueberries, because it's not meant to taste good. Children are not going to be in love with that taste.
Unless you're okay with them eating the paint, and then I'm okay with that.
Yeah. And also, there's no toxins in these ingredients, so you don't have to be concerned about them eating it if they choose to. All these are non-toxic and nutritious, and it's a good option if you would like your kid not to eat the paint, or if you do, either way, it works. You want to add a clay or cornstarch. This is to help your paint thicken up. It's very expensive to use a lot of powdered herbs or spices. So if you add in clay or cornstarch, it's a filler and it bulks your paints up. I honestly, when I first started teaching art classes, I didn't know that this was a good idea to add these elements. This mm-hmm. I learned very quickly. The amount of material I wasted and the amount of lack I had of material was really sad. I wish I'd known that sooner into my artistic endeavors. And finally, you need a liquid to help your paint spread. So water is the first option. It obviously liquefies your paint. It's very cheap. You can decide to go with water. You just need to know that it's going to be like a watercolor paint, and it will absorb very quickly into your paper. So the plus side to this is that your paints will be used up too quickly, and you can paint on upright surfaces since your paint won't run. But the downside is that your paint will not last very long because it will grow bacteria. You'll only be able to store these for about a week or so before you need to make more of them. This is a really good thing to bear in mind, because a lot of paints have chemicals in them that help them to last long term. This is something to bear in mind when making natural paints, is that they do have an expiration date.
That is good to know.
Egg whites are great to use for making homemade paints. They make your paints very thick, much more spreadable, and they hold your paints to the surface of a paper much nicer. Think of temperas. If anyone here doesn't know tempera paints, the very popular non-toxic child's paint is created with egg whites for the same reason. It sits nicely, dries quickly. But the downside is that it can be expensive and they won't store. These paints will last a very short amount of time due to the food nature of them. And finally, glycerin. This is a sweet liquid that can be found online and sometimes in the pharmacy section of your grocery store. If you're concerned about kids eating the paint, get food grade glycerin.
You can use those to make bubbles too.
Yes. Yeah. Glycerin's amazing. And this will last you at least a month if you keep it in an airtight container. So glycerin is the best option for your nature paints, for your herb and spice paints, because it makes them spreadable. It can keep well. The only thing is that, you know, everything has a positive, everything has a negative. If you use too much, the paint will be very runny and not very usable. So just choose your battle, pick your poison. You've got some great options here. Just, you know, it's like, have fun with it. Play everything by ear. And the next step is to obviously mix these ingredients together, equal parts herbs and clay, and just a small amount of liquid. You play with it to see what is the right amount. There is no direct measurement source here. It's play with it and see what works best for you. And the second paint tip I wanted to include was mud paint.
Yes. You know, I've never actually made official mud paint before.
Really?
I only ever have done like tempera paint mixed with mud. This you is better, right? I think like.
No, it's the same.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay.
The main ingredient here is tempera.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So mud is the number one ingredient. Powdered tempera is the recommended.
Oh, yeah. Because I always use liquid tempera. Yeah.
It's Oh, and that's what I always did too.
But I bet it would be like more vibrant if you used powdered.
Agreed. And the other recommendation is if you don't have powdered tempera, using liquid watercolors or food coloring. The issue I've had with this is someone who's experimented with powdered tempera versus liquid watercoloring, a food coloring to mud, is if you, my gosh, some mud can be very thick and some mud can be really runny. Mm-hmm. And you might just get a really big sludge in the end of the day if you use food coloring. That's why powder tempera is so nice, because it's an active thickener. It will thicken up the mud and make it this perfect consistency.
Mm-hmm.
So the recommended supplies for mud paint is very simple. It's mud, a coloring agent. So powder tempera, watercolor paints, or food coloring. Dawn dish soap, we're going to get into that. Water, and then obviously a material to paint with and to paint on. So cardstock and paint brushes. You can use mud. I copied and pasted this, so don't mind the the stories. Use just like the last activity we talked about, it's all by your own measurement scale. So using a large amount of mud, add your coloring source bit by bit to gauge how much you need to turn the mud the color you're aiming for, as well as to get that right texture. You're looking to get a thick texture, but not too runny and not too thick that you can't move it across paper with a brush. One fun idea is to add Dawn dish soap to this mixture, because not only does it help break down your mud into a softer, more workable material, but it keeps children's clothing stain free. When you add Dawn dish soap, it immediately makes it easier to wash those stains out of clothing.
Yeah. And mud paint, woohoo, that will stain clothes right up.
Especially Virginian mud. We've talked about this so many times, but it's so pigmented.
Again, shout out to Fels Naphtha. One day they're going to hire us. We're going to get paid for talking about that. But yeah, Fels Naphtha bar, but such a good idea to put Dawn in, especially in your mud paint before using it, because or use clothes you do not care about.
And it smells good and it feels good. Like, I'm a big fan of Dawn as
we get, because I like to get the ones that don't have the coloring in it. So I get like where they're just kind of clear. But the one we have right now is lavender.
You know how I feel about lavender?
Real. Yeah, it's real nice. It's real nice.
Oh my gosh. And then, so an option is if you don't feel like making paint because you're maybe a little wary about the mess and you want to stick with the basics, you have a great paint you want to use, make some nature paint brushes. I can't tell you how many times as a Reggio art teacher, I made nature paint brushes. I gotta say, these things work terribly. Let me just put this out here. My disclaimer, I have never, ever made a nature paintbrush that has lasted more than 10 minutes. They are hard to work with.
This is a really good example of like process and not product. Yeah. You're not going to get a good product from this. No. It will just,
you're not making a Picasso here, or you are. Like, that's my biggest thing is I delved into nature paintbrushes so many times with children, every age, infant, preschool, pre-K, and so on. There's so many different ways that kids want to work on this. Like with babies, you're going to have to know that you need to use larger parts. It's going to fall apart very quickly. Enjoy it for what it is and enjoy it for the experience they get from it. For preschool to pre-K, I noticed that they loved working with it, the textures and whatnot, and the textures they made on paper. And I'm jumping ahead here. To make a nature paintbrush, it's very simple. Get a stick appendage of some, a firm appendage from outside. Use a rubber band, hot glue, or tape to attach a natural material such as grass, flowers, leaves, pine cones, etc., to the end of the stick to create a nature paintbrush. It is very straightforward, very simple. So preschool just want to enjoy it for the texture. And I found that kindergarten and up love to make their own paintbrushes, but they had to have the understanding that it might break rather quickly. So this is a great experience with children to discuss both mechanism. How do you create a tool out of the world around you, and also texture. How do you create unique marks and unique texture by using these nature paintbrushes? It's fun to see what children will do with the stem of a flower, with the twigs of a pine cone, to see what they will make. But just please bear in mind that unlike the messy heaviness of the mud paint and the spice paints, this one is much more light and much more introspective when it comes to how you use them.
I snuck in and I added one more to this list.
I love it.
So flower stain art, there's a couple ways you can do this. I did this very recently. We did. Yeah. That's one of the ways that I was thinking. So probably you've seen it. You can use paper or you can use fabric. Fabric is very fun if you can do that. And you
love
collect different flowers, especially if you can do like weeds and things like that. Dandelions are a great one. Violets are a great one. And you put the fabric.
Lots of violets in Virginia right now.
Mm-hmm. And you can hit it with a hammer and it will leave a stain print on it. What I have done recently that because we just made a dandelion violet lemonade on Sunday.
And the muffins that you made.
Yeah, I love dandelion muffins. But so when we had gathered dandelions for the lemonade, I showed Leo how to just straight like dandelions. Did you ever do that little dumb thing when you're a kid where it has the thing with the dandelion and like there's like a poem and
I don't think I know
this. They go up, the dad goes up and uses the bathroom. The mom goes up and uses the bathroom. The kid goes up but then the baby doesn't make it. And the baby doesn't make it to the bathroom. And then you smear the dandelion across their arms and it leaves a dandelion stain.
I just saw dandelions. It's buttercups where you hold the buttercup under your chin. And if your chin has a yellow reflection on it, which it will, it means you like butter.
That was so silly, but I
love that. I also, as you were saying this, I thought of another art form that I really enjoyed, chlorophyll art. Have you seen this?
Oh, yeah.
Brush leaves and get that natural green stain and you spread it on white paper and it makes the best green stain.
So cool. Yeah. So directly, a lot of these materials have a good enough stain in there that like, if you're not caring about, like the one that's nice about using a hammer to get the stain is that it's so like you get to see kind of the shape of the flower or whatever you're using. But
amazing.
You can use them as just kind of like almost a marker. A lot of these things you can,
it's pretty stunning when you think about it.
Yeah.
Who's had grass stains on their white pants or white shorts or dress when they sit down? It's a very natural pigment. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite examples, and I'll have to include some stories, making watercolors using natural pigments and dyes. I've done this with many age groups, old enough to use a mortar and pestle, which is like to me my number one recommendation for any nature-based art subjects. Yep. You take a mortar and pestle, you find materials like dandelions, like leaves, anything that has a strong natural pigment, which can be tested by crushing it in your fingers. You crush up these materials and you put them in hot water to soak in the water, creates amazing natural paints, watercolors.
And you could, if you're with them for an extended period of time, you could do it just like how you'd make a sweet tea or something like that, where you can put it in the water and just leave it out in the sun for a while. And then you don't have to worry with the heat. And then it will be fun to go back and find it and be like, let's check in on our colors.
That's a great idea. Shout out to Inventors Workshop with lovely, it was specifically Tiaja. She really worked with me for a couple months in the summer of 2021 to focus wholly. Every week they would collect new materials and like crush them up and spend the next week beginning the day by doing a study, a watercolor study with the watercolor paints they had made. And then we'd go out and get new materials for the next round of paints.
That's so cool. I love notably, that.
These keep better than the spice paints that we talked about. They still have an expiration.
Yeah.
It would smell very bad after a couple weeks. Yeah. Some of them, not all of them. Some of them were actually pretty hardy.
Well, I'd say, the number one fertilizer I use for my plants is I just cut up banana peels and fill it with water, like put filtered water in there. And it works really well. But like, by week two, that smells real rough.
It's really interesting how powerful nature can be from all sides, birth to life, birth to death and all. And one of my favorites, this isn't really child friendly, but it makes a good one. If you have coffee grounds at home, I'm actually pointing behind me to one of my paintings, great natural stain. Onion peels, onion peels and coffee grounds.
Yeah. Well, and I'd say even like for older children, like, I don't think there'd be a huge problem with it. But like, this is painting material, not drinking material, you know?
Yep. Or do decaffeinated coffee grounds.
Yeah.
That's
something
that you want to take the time to get. I mean, talk about what a natural, rich, dark brown pigment that is. I mean, just amazing. And I also love going back to the discussion on the spice and herb paintings, chalk. We have a lot of chalk in a lot of art studios. It's already a great pigment. It's a very natural, deep black. Use that as well. That's another great object and a great subject to consider, you know, crushing up and spreading around. So white or black. I'm so sorry. Charcoal.
Okay.
Oh my gosh. I'm sitting here. I was like, wait. I was like, why am I saying white? There's no such thing as white charcoal. Black chalk. That's what I meant. I feel so silly. I'm sorry about that.
No, that's okay. That just makes a lot more sense. Okay. I was like,
doesn't it? Oh my gosh.
I mean, I'd assume a chalk is natural-ish, right?
Some chalks. I don't know. I did research on this recently because I'm mildly allergic to allergic to charcoal. I'm mildly allergic to chalk.
And you're allergic to clay, I'd assume it'd be similar.
It's like earthen based substances on my hands for a long time are really, I don't know what the connection is specifically. But some chalk is, I did my research on this recently. Some chalk is organic and some is not. That's basically the simple answer behind it. Some of it's made of certain particles, some of it's made of very natural particles. So yeah, that's the simple answer. I'm not going to look into it too much because I just know what gives me hives and what doesn't. So
fair enough.
Good time.
The last one I wanted to say, is one I've never done, but I know you've done it. And I love the results of this. It's not quite the same, but generally use it with natural materials and you're using nature.
I have a feeling what you're going to say.
Cyanotypes. There we go.
Say that.
Yeah.
As soon as you mentioned baking the watercolors outside, I was like, I know what she's going to say. It's one of the best activities. It teaches time. It teaches understanding nature, the process of the sun. How interesting to explain to children that this is why we wear sunscreen, because look at what is occurring to this paper. It's a great natural discussion on the power of sun. And that's one of my other favorite outdoor art activities to start marrying. You know, I've been mentioning things like, you know, go look at the leaves, go look at the trees, look up. What about the sun? Mm-hmm. Consider doing natural sun catchers. So whether you're manipulating light by making, I did this activity a few years ago. We bought a huge opaque white tarp. So it was just clear enough that light passed through, but was pretty thick otherwise. And we all painted on it with acrylics, which though being a very thick paint, acrylics, nothing is a match for a white surface in the sun. So the sun would beat through that white sheet and color the light that came through it.
Cool.
So consider that as well as how can you play with light as one of your natural substances?
Yep. We did a whole episode on light. Exactly. That one. Very cool.
So I like how it all leads back because again, art and nature is such a natural combination. Mm-hmm. So I'll throw this one up to the top of the list. Another good example of how to incorporate art with nature in an outside activity, fort building, your whole episode on forts. That is such an artistic endeavor. It's creative process. It's technical. So take your children outside and, you know, talk about building a house, talking about building a structure. That's an artistic endeavor right there. We talk about playing with mud. We talk about mud paint, mud drawings. I love this because it's a simple appendage activity and it's encouraging them to see the capability to create with anything around them. Find an appendage or use your finger, your finger is an appendage, and create lines, markings, and drawings within a pool of mud. It's a creative way to watch your process get, you know, stuck in the mud.
I love that.
Pattern making with collected materials. We talked about this earlier in this episode, how mathematics comes so heavily into the combination of art and nature. Classification and collection is a good art form. Have them work on classifying, collecting based on certain characteristics. So color, size, texture. Look for shells at the beach and classify shells. Oh my gosh, shell collecting is such a good artistic endeavor in nature. And then talk about painting them later. I love painting shells. What a fun beach activity.
What about pet rocks?
Oh my gosh, I love pet rocks.
That could fit in this category, right?
Oh, we talked about this in the pets episode because a pet rock is a really good way to just start like minor motivations. I love when everything comes full circle. Mm-hmm. So, okay. I love this activity I'm about to mention, but I have to admit, I have never had this work with any child under the age of 8. Mandalas. I'm obsessed with mandalas. If you don't know what a mandala is, let me get the proper diagnosis up. Mandala literally means circle in the ancient Sanskrit language of Hinduism and Buddhism. And traditionally, a mandala is a geometric designer pattern that was meant to represent the cosmos or deities, like the heavenly bodies. But what it's come to symbolize very simply in the artistic world is it is a repetitive and hyper detailed pattern in a circular shape. So I am a huge fan of mandalas. They are beautiful. They are so interesting. I did have one class I had mandalas work out with. We focused on a combination of, actually it was a very good, I haven't mentioned this paint type yet, sand paint. It's the same as mud paints, but you use sand instead of mud. Ooh. You need a little more of a liquid base for it. We use sand paint, gravity, and a drop base activity. And what we did was we would pour a big puddle of sand paint. We'd pour a second color of sand paint and then a third color. And so all of it would flow outward and make a perfect mandala. It was a very naturally occurring mandala. Cool. So I had suggested that what you could do is try to create a circular pattern using found materials in nature. That's a good option for a more controlled nature-based indoor art activity. But one of the reasons why I like mandalas a lot and why I encourage it to be sought after as an art subject is because a true mandala in artistic format is destroyed after its completion. Hmm. And it's supposed to represent, especially in Buddhism, that nothing is forever. Uh-huh. And that things are never, like life isn't permanent, thoughts are fleeting. And a mandala is a great representation. You can look up these amazing videos online of monks that will spend like a year creating these incredibly elaborate 50-foot mandalas out of sand or out of rocks and sand. And then they will brush it all away in a matter of minutes. Wow. And it's like,
I can walk away from it and leave it outside and leave it to go to nature. I wouldn't be able to mess it up myself.
No, that art of destroy. I really encourage anybody to look up the creation and destruction of mandalas. There are some amazing videos out there. They really make you think about what it means to put so much effort into something and be so willing to let it go.
Mm-hmm.
I think the symbolism there is incredibly poignant.
Yeah.
So bear that in mind. Just kind of hits home in many ways. And of course, there's many other ways in which...
Wait, were you going to move on?
Yeah.
Okay, wait, I just don't want to move on yet quite from mandalas. This is just like, because you said that you haven't had a lot of success with mandalas. And I would agree. I've done mandalas with lots of... And I'm always doing them outside. Yeah, generally. Have I ever done mandalas inside with a class? I don't think so. I think I've always done them outside. This is just an interesting observation. Like with younger children, mandalas are just like no, they just flat out do not work. Yeah. But what I found
has it doesn't make sense to them.
It does, like, it just doesn't seem, maybe somebody has found a way to make it make sense to them. And if so, like, please share that with us. But yeah. However, what I have found is with a little bit older children getting more into like maybe 5, 6, I think I can think of a 4-year-old that she kind of was doing that, is that they can do it more, like, I guess this is pattern making, but like they can do it pretty successfully if they even make the connection to make it as a line instead of a circle. So
love that.
Yeah. And that's so I've had some really cool experiences with, and it seems to be personality based too, a lot with that, where they have the attention span to focus on it for a longer time. But I've also just had children be kind of inspired, but like, and make pictures out of their material. Like, generally I have them go and gather the material and make art out of it. And I generally have a mandala set up that I've kind of made to show them.
I think we as adults are incredibly attracted to mandalas.
Yeah. I don't know what it is, but it seems to some of them have been inspired by it. And then they make art that is a lot more chaotic than, I think, probably because we just like order a lot more as adults. I don't know. We want to feel like we have control over things and we don't.
I bet you there is a great study on this. I also have a very strong personal theory from working with adults and working with children that there is a stronger preference for, how do I put this? Rigid shape and harder lines with younger children, whether it's purposeful or not. I've noticed a lot of children have more of a focus on the concrete. So, you know, like the harsh lines of a toy, the black outlines of an image in a book, a very distinct, harsh outline. Adults have a little more of an appreciation and an understanding for the organic line, for the organic shape. And the beauty of the mandala is the organic shape. And a circle in of itself is a very hard shape to conceptualize. A circle is a hard thing to make. It's a hard thing to make perfect. Triangle is very easy. A square is very straightforward. It's a few lines together. A circle doesn't quite hit that same bound. I don't know how accurate that statement is, but I do feel quite akin to saying that, because I think we as adults have a real interest in the organic and the flow. Not all. And that's kind of a hard thing for a child. Things are becoming more rigid. Things, they're trying to learn what the world is as a structure. So why bring a flow and organic concept into that? I don't know. Just that's a thought fair. To put out
no,
there.
No, that's very interesting.
Thank you.
Leo, I think, is going to be an adult that has a hard time
with organic.
He's really, really into rules. Like,
I've noticed that about him.
Like on Sunday, I had to tell him, like, because he kept saying, like, he would not eat breakfast until he had changed into his clothes for the day. And he was like, I can't eat breakfast in my jammies, right mom? And I was like, no, it's fine, you could eat breakfast in your jammies if you like. I eat breakfast in my jammies. And he was like, we can't eat breakfast in our jammies, right mom? And I was like, okay. And John was like, the other day was trying to eat without, he went to go eat without a shirt on. And Leo was like, we have to wear a shirt when we eat. Right, Dad?
That's so funny.
Right, Dad? There are not rules for everything, Leo. There's enough rules in life without you making up different ones.
That's so cute. By the time this episode comes out, it will have been Earth Day last week. We would have just finished Barefoot is Best, followed by Art in Nature. I just think it's a beautiful coupling of the two things that we love the most, Lizzie, which is art and nature and the way that art and nature coupled together. I'm just really grateful we could have conversations like this and that we could share this passion with other people, because it's really important to consider these two factors and how they affect our children and the way that they interpret the world.
Amen. Mm-hmm. I don't have it. You always have like nice things to add at the end. And I'm just like, I enjoyed listening to this episode.
We hope that you enjoyed this conversation and you join us within the comment section of both our podcast episodes or our many socials, which include Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook. Add your own ideas. We'd love to hear how you incorporate art and nature, or art in nature. What things do you find in the world that are most beautiful to you? What inspires you? What kind of art have you created based on nature or using nature? Have you done so with your kids, or has it been an adult activity? We'd love to hear. This has been an amazing time talking with you all, because this is, I've already said this a few times. And also, don't forget to leave us a rating. It really helps us understand what you like about us and what we can do to further keep you involved in our lives and our conversations.
It also helps other people find us, which is great too, to add more people to our community and keep our conversations going.
And take a picture of us. We hope that you join us for next week's episode, which is going to be all about
bugs,
which is another great correlation with this month of May. It seems to have quite a heavy focus on nature and the way that we raise our children with the world around us.
We are gung-ho just focusing on nature. I can't complain about it.
Like we said at the beginning of the episode, while we are nature-focused year-round, a lot of people, for them, this is their time to shine, that they're getting outside into the natural world. So, hey, share your adventures with us. We'd love to hear. And then in the meantime, this has been an incredible episode. And this is the Speckled Bees.
Buzzing out.
There's no fun song that goes up today's topic.
wait, what's the song we sang at the very beginning? Oh,